Hello there. This is Eric Sinrod from Duane Morris with our weekly Tech Law 10 podcast. I'm joined by my partner, Jonathan Armstrong, across the pond in the United Kingdom. And I think, Jonathan, you might want to talk about the Jubilee and the festivities, but perhaps even more specifically, maybe you can enlighten us as to how technology has advanced during the interim time period. I'm turning it over now to Jonathan Armstrong.
Yeah, I'd be happy to, and thank you for that big build-up. And happy Jubilee to those of you who are celebrating. I know many of you in America are. I hear from a client that she spent yesterday evening 2 hours in the company of Katie Couric hearing all about the royal family. And it's definitely gripped the UK as well. And it made me reflect, really, how technology has changed since the Queen Elizabeth took the throne. For example, in 1952, I can remember my grandmother telling me about how I think they were the only people in the street to have a TV. So the whole street came round and crammed into their not large living room to watch the coronation of the Queen on a flickering black and white set, roughly the same size as an iPad, with a whole street watching. And that was the way in which they're connected with the festivities down in London. Obviously, in 1952, TVs were only just being rolled out, and the Jubilee was quite a catalyst in the UK for television broadcasting, and look how that's developed for good or bad since. The video recorder had only been invented in 1951 and was the preserve of the true elite. So there was no time shifting. There was no ability to watch the event later unless it was repeated by one of, well, the only broadcaster that was available to you in the UK. I'm not sure there were many broadcasters more in the US. The first photocopying machine was invented in 1952. There was no ability before then to copy documents, really, other than some fairly primitive systems, the most primitive of which, of course, going back to the days of the monasteries, being to copy documents out by hand, or obviously the printing press had been invented even before your time, Eric, in the 1600s.
You're going to pay for that one.
And I thought I'd have a brief look at computing. Around this time, the sort of almost the state-of-the-art computer was still a computer called Colossus, which had been the computer invented by the post office in the UK, which was used to crack the Enigma code. Colossus was still largely a secret. It was moved in 1952 from the country house where it had been based during the war, cracking Nazi codes. It was moved to the government GCHQ, the UK government's facility in Cheltenham in 1952. That was a computer that, that like me on a bad day, had no memory at all.
Is that you on a good day, Jonathan?
And then two computers were commercially released around that time, 1952. There was the Leo computer, which came from Cambridge in England, which was the first commercial computer, only operated on punched cards, and the Ferranti Mark I Manchester computer, which was effectively the first business computer. But a lot of things didn't exist and didn't come along until later in the 50s. So hard disks, for example, the first hard disk appeared in 1956. The first satellite, obviously, was launched in 1957. There were no satellite communications until then. Modems weren't invented until 1958. Integrated circuits didn't exist until 1958. And microchips didn't exist until 1959, just as the decade was closing. And perhaps, Eric, before we discuss how the legal effects changed, I think one of the interesting things is the cultural change as well. I'm in the unfortunate position at the moment. My grandmother died, as you know, Eric, and we're just wrapping up her house and her estate. And I found some fascinating documents, so I thought I'd share one of them with you. The technology that they had in their house, they moved in 1956, I think, to a newly built house. And there are all sorts of bits of technology. My granddad really loved his sort of technology, even until the later years. He was still a tech addict. But there's all sorts of things they had added to the house that I don't know. I can't even decipher what they are. They had a special refrigerator fitted, an Electrolux Type M27. And it was apparently specially manufactured so that it had no noise, vibration, or interference to radio or television. Mm-hmm. This was a time when fridges were still stopping people listen to the radio or watch television. And in something that I guess wouldn't be regarded as in any way PC these days, the other feature of this magnificent refrigerator was, and I'm quoting exactly, "The height at which the refrigerator is fixed avoids any need for the housewife having to stoop when using the appliance." So we're selling technology on the basis of no housewife stoop. And I'm wondering what sort of a reaction electronics manufacturers would get if they advertised with that as a feature these days, Eric.
I don't think that would fly too well. Are you still proceeding through the decades here, or should I jump in a little bit?
No, please jump in. I mean, I think I'm done for the major developments of the 1950s.
Okay.
It obviously has changed, I think, the way in which we work, and we've talked about this before. You know, the 1950s was a decade, really, where lawyers, those in business, were still writing letters to each other, which I guess they did write up until when I first became a lawyer in the 90s. But it's hard to envision life, isn't it, in the modern office, in a time when there weren't really any copying machines, no computers, landlines only. And it's not surprising, is it, that people make more mistakes because of all of this technology at their disposal and because of the way in which the world has changed pace?
I think that's a really good point. And although, unlike you, I was alive in the 1950s, but only for about a year and a half, I'll point out. In my legal practice, I have seen, major developments, and I'm sure you have too. But when I first started practicing law way back long ago in 1984, people actually did draft and send letters. I had a very fancy machine. It was a typewriter with a mag card, so it had a little tiny bit of memory. We even used whiteout back in those days when mistakes were made. But we tried to be very careful. And it wasn't too long after that, faxes started becoming, I wouldn't say common, but they were being used. And if a fax came in for me, the receptionist would page me throughout the entire law firm saying, "Mr. Sinrod, you have a fax at the front desk." You thought, man, this is really important. Something's coming over relatively instantaneously. And, now, of course, we receive everything. We're bombarded with, communications constantly by way of email, text, social media, and the like. And there's an expectation of rapid, if not instantaneous, turnaround. And a lot of these technological advances that were designed to save time and perhaps make our lives easier so we could relax and have some leisure, I think have resulted in the exact opposite experience. We're on 24/7. Clients and colleagues expect you to be available with turnaround in a nanosecond. And as you say, there's room for mistake, partially, in part because practically every form of communication is now captured. Back in the day, you would have a formal letter or a formal memorandum, and you would take due care and maybe create some drafts and then send it out as final and polished. Now we're responding and essentially talking to one another through electronic media,
and it's
preserved, whereas if we were simply talking to one another by the water cooler, those words would disappear and not be preserved for later review.
I think you're dead right. I've actually been doing a case this week where IMs are relevant, so instant messages between people. Now, obviously, in the 1950s, the equivalent, even this Leo machine that was state-of-the-art, the state-of-the-art computer in those days, still worked on punched cards. Computers didn't yet even have electronic tapes. So if you were punching a card to somebody, you'd pretty much take care to make sure that it was accurate. Mm-hmm. But obviously with IM, people are responding instantly. And we have this particular case I have is a request has been made for all of those IM messages. And people have said dumb things because, as you rightly say, these are sort of water cooler conversations sometimes. But they're talking about, you know, real people and real events, and those IMs are disclosable and are there permanently.
Oh, I had a case, Jonathan. I had a case where there were over 200 million electronic records exchanged. Now, you can imagine when the case ultimately goes to the jury, you're not going to be trotting out 200 million records, but only a handful. And out of 200 million, if you have 5 or 10, let's say, email messages that are relatively damning, but were truly said in a kind of spontaneous, cavalier way without much effect, they could still persuade, you know, the fact finder in a case to go a given way.
Now, incredible, and I think it shows us how the world's changed. So I guess we're probably up to our 10 minutes.
Yep.
I guess we probably have to say, for those of you who aren't arch Republicans, long live the Queen, and we'll speak to you next week. For those of you who are based in the UK and are having this long weekend of celebrations, celebrate well and wisely, and I guess we normally give our normal public safety message of drink blackberries and iPhones don't usually mix. Remember that over the Jubilee weekend as well.
Well, you're certainly going to have your festivities, the Jubilee, the Olympics coming up. It must be quite a bit of mirth and merriment there over in the UK. So we're now signing off. This is Eric Sinrod and Jonathan Armstrong from Duane Morris with your weekly Tech Law 10 podcast. You can find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. My email address is ejsinrod@duanemorris.com. Jonathan?
I'm jparmstrong@duanemorris.com. By the way, in our LinkedIn group, which is just Tech Law 10 on LinkedIn, we have started a discussion about people's favorite technology from the 1950s. So if you think we've missed something out, and we undoubtedly have, or you've got your own memories, do pitch in and discuss them with us online. Just the Tech Law 10 group on LinkedIn. Easy to find. If you struggle, give us a ring. We'll talk you through it. All that remains, I think, Eric, is to thank you for listening and to say we'll speak with you next week.
Yes, that's it.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.